You are listening to the Marty Leeds Mathematical Radio Hour, where we discuss myth, math, spirituality, philosophy, and much, much more. www.thesyncbook.com. Welcome, everyone. Marty here once again. Thanks for joining me. I was really excited to speak to my guest for this show. I've been a big fan of Max Egan for a while now and consider him a pillar of morality. And as always, Max delivered the goods. This is the 23rd episode of this show, and with the number 23 found in the gematria of the word heaven, it is no coincidence that a man who brings heaven right here to earth is the guest for tonight's broadcast. Great sync. Happy to have Max aboard tonight. I'm not going to hem and haw on in this intro, and I'm just going to get right down to the meat and potatoes for y'all. Just a quick note, The Sync Book has its subscriber section up and running. Just please visit thesyncbook.com/membership, and you have several choices and ways in which you can support the great content at The Sync Book. Alrighty, my friends, let's do this. Tonight's guests are lecturer, documentarian, author, and radio show host Max Egan, and the musical guest is Tom Rhodes.
Here at thesyncbook.com, we are a community exploring the impossible. Artists and seekers looking at the interconnected nature of all things. As of 2015, Syncbook Radio has over 25 gigs of high-quality audio without a single advertisement. And we keep on growing. We now have 6 radio programs producing regular content. Clearly, we have outgrown one model and are birthing another. We have spent the last 5 years attempting to build a space where researchers and seekers can take an honest approach to this material, where people can look at these weird things without being laughed at or yelled at, to build a community that encourages each other to continue to learn and to explore. This quest began in earnest with the publication of the first Sync Book back in 2011. Since then, it has ballooned into a major undertaking, and thesyncbook.com has become a repository for cutting-edge media and all things sync. Along the way, we have found amazing allies to become an unparalleled creative team. We have met the most supportive and loving fans. And, of course, we've bumped heads with a few assholes. With all of your help, we've been able to grow and provide a platform to more artists. Now, we are asking you to take the next step with us. After investing a ton of time, energy, money, and hard fucking work, thesyncbook.com has just finished its major overhaul, and we are ready for you to make yourselves cozy here. We've installed new players for our podcasts, with streaming from fast and reliable hosting. We added expanded search functions that tap into classic sync video libraries. And our new member section gives access to our full archive of over 600 hours of podcasts, as well as members-only media, HD videos, and transcripts. There's also discounted physical copies of Syncbook Press titles, as well as Google Hangouts with the radio hosts every month. You'll also have an opportunity to tap into additional exclusive media inside Dropbox 42. For those of you unable to purchase memberships, rest assured that the 3 most recent episodes of all podcasts will remain free for everyone, every week. So regular listeners will be able to continue enjoying these shows uninterrupted. While financial realities dictate that we can't keep up this level of output and continue to give away everything for free, we've made every possible effort to make this something all of you would really want to be a part of. Please visit thesyncbook.com/membership now.
Our guest tonight is Max Egan. Max Egan has been working his tail off for over 8 years now in an effort to help collectively wake humanity up from its moral and ethical slumber. Max has given lectures all over the world on many varying issues, including the horrors that we see happening in the Gaza Strip currently. Having visited there himself and seen the issues facing that region firsthand, Max has become one of the key speakers in the alternative movement, exposing the atrocities happening in that region. Max has released 6 feature-length documentaries, has written a book entitled Earth's Forbidden Secrets, and hosts his own radio show called The Crow House. You can catch up on his wonderful work at www.thecrowhouse.com. So without further ado, let's get pious with Max Egan.
Max, welcome. Thanks so much for doing this. I've been a big fan of your work and perspectives for a long time, so it's just a great pleasure to speak with you.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking me on, brother.
Yeah. How are things in Australia?
Oh, good as far as the weather goes, bad as far as the political climate goes. What can I say? Same as everywhere else, you know, going steadily downhill, but otherwise good. If we can eliminate the politicians from the equation, a lot better.
and how do we do that?
Well, that's a good question, isn't it? I think by uniting the community, that's how we do it. This is what I've been saying to people for years, Marty. We've got to start creating friendships on the ground with people. We need a strong communal response to the actions of government. And we're only going to get that from grassroots action. And one of the most important things people can do when they look at this whole situation, they feel inactive. They feel, wow, what can I do to make a difference? Becoming friends with the people next door is a big thing you can do. It may seem like a little thing, but it's not. Because once you become friends with people, then they'll listen to your political perspectives. You can have conversations with them. You know, if you go screaming fear with a megaphone on the streets, then they're going to run away and hide. But if you're friends with these people and you start pointing out the obvious to them in such a way that it opens doorways for self-discovery for them, then you're making a difference. Because if we've got this friendship and this respect in our communities, then we can stand up to anything government does. But while we have communities that continually measure each other according to social and economic parameters and like to see other people in hardship and, you know, like to point the finger and revel in the pain of somebody else because they're kept in such a state of scarcity, and it's kind of a program we've got. It breeds this inherent sociopathy in people. You know, people like to see someone fall on their face and they point the finger and laugh a little bit rather than go and help them, you know. But it's a really, that's a big thing we can do, Marty, become friends. It's such an important thing we can do because then we've got a strong communal response and that's what we're lacking. That's how they've got us through our divided communities. I'm of the belief that every problem we face is a result of government legislation that has been put in place because the people aren't paying attention, mainly because they're divided. And that's where the focus has to be. You know, you've got to address things in the root core of the problem and stop looking at the symptoms, you know?
Yeah, you know, through my own life, I've noticed that as well. It's like, you know, if you try to attack somebody's position, immediately they're going to be on the defensive, you know? And a lot of times, especially when you might be passionate about something, that can be really hard to not come off as so, you know, antagonistic almost.
Well, yeah, you come across as fanatical to people and they think, wow, this guy's a fanatic. He's in a state of fear. This is not good. I don't want to be like him. And they shut down completely and you never wake these people up. You know, what you got to do is lead by example in what you do. People need to see you're a better person for having this information. I mean, I have a life, it's almost charmed my life. Everything just seems to fall into place for me. And people go, how do you do it? And I go, it's because I understand how reality works. And I have no fear of anything. I have no stake in the outcome of anything I do. I don't expect any particular certain result. I expect it to move in a certain direction. But then I just see what's going to happen from that point. I don't have any real stake in the outcome of anything that I do. I don't even have a stake in the outcome of this struggle. I mean, I won't be here for that much longer. I'm nearly 60. So, you know, you've got to have this attitude where you're just presenting information to people from a calm and friendly perspective, and you're giving them little snippets of information and little suggestions of information so that you're opening doorways of interest for them, which they can then walk through and discover the truth for themselves. But you can't ever tell anybody the truth because you're challenging their paradigm. Now, you go up and you tell people this is a slavery system being run by banks who control all of our governments and all these wars are fake and all this stuff. They freak out and they don't understand it and they don't want to understand it and they don't want to believe it because you're challenging their entire paradigm, their entire reality, everything they thought was real up to this point. They might be 40 or 50 years old. They've been living 40 or 50 years in this matrix and you've come up and said, hey, everything you know is wrong. And this is hugely confrontational to people. So you've got to become their friends and then just start having conversations. So listen to their political perspectives. Don't shout them down. Listen to them. and then just offer them, well, suggest maybe it might be a little different to what you think. Maybe it might be like this. Have you ever thought about that? And just see where they go and say, well, maybe you should go and look at this website or go and read this book or whatever. And they will end up coming back to you going, oh, my God, the world is not the way I thought it was. And they'll discover the truth for themselves. That's how you do it. You've got to be planting seeds of self-discovery with people. You can't just go and shout the truth at them because they'll freak out, they'll run away, they'll stick their head in the sand, and they'll never, ever look up again.
You know, when you were saying that, everything in your life just kind of, you know, happened for you. It just kind of came into, you know, whenever you needed something, it just kind of happened. To me, there's something about the awakening process and that, you know, the fluidity of life, something about going with the flow. What is, when somebody says waking up or awakening, what is that, how do you define that? What does that mean to you?
Well, seeing the world for what it is, realizing that they've been looking at the world with blinkers on. It's not about economics. It's about who you are. It's about life itself. See, we're kind of born into a machine and we're taught that we've got to be these functional little cogs within the machine. But hang on, we're alive. We're an artistic expression of creation ourselves, and we came here to create with the abilities we were given, with the tools we were given, in the vessel we were given, and we're here to create to the best of our potential. And we're not allowed to do that, and we miss out on living our own lives because we're so caught up in this system and collecting paper to pay to be alive. You know, we believe it's all about rungs on the social ladder and the economic ladder, and there comes this point in life, usually, unfortunately, at the end of most people's lives when they get a chance to retire, and they've got all this stuff around them and all these big houses and all this stuff, but they don't know themselves and they've never really experienced themselves. And when they come to that realization that there's more, it's actually about them. It's about their creative potential. To me, that's awakening. You wake up to the fact that you're living in a control grid. You're living in a slavery system. People don't realize they are because it's an open prison. There's no walls around this prison. It's a prison of your mind. It's a prison of debt slavery. But we're always required to walk between the lines. We've got to ask permission to do everything. And people get to a point in their life and they realize that, hang on, it's just people here. It's all just people. There's no real rulers. There's no one with really any authority. There's simply government and people. And government are simply a group of people we appoint to manage our infrastructure for us. So why am I in such a state of hardship due to these people I've employed to look after the roads and stuff for me? You know, and this is a huge confrontation to a lot of people, but it's a huge realization to people. But it's just waking up to the fact that your life has been controlled. You've been told to walk between the lines and do this and do that and stop, go, and all of this sort of stuff. What's it all for? What's it all about? And cities, even when you look at cities are simply put there, and business within the cities is simply put there to keep the people busy, keep them occupied. They run around and shift paper all around the cities and move stuff around and fill out documents and sign forms and do all this stuff, which is completely and utterly meaningless. It's all about this economic system. It's not about life. And that's what it is. They wake up to life, that it's actually about life. And we're not experiencing that. All we're doing is supporting this economic model, which is designed to destroy life. It's designed to destroy the earth. I mean, when you think about it, you've got a system based on permanent growth. We're supporting this economic model, which has to continue to grow. So the only way we can do that is to make everything we make to break. We've got to make everything temporary so we can keep making it so the economy can keep growing. So essentially we're pulling resources out of the earth and we're turning them into rubbish. And if we continue, I mean, it's a planet of finite resources. If we continue, we're going to turn the whole planet into a rubbish tip that will not support human life. So what is the purpose of supporting this economic model, which is anti-life? You know, that's a big awakening for people when they see that. They see what the economy is actually doing. And all of our politicians, that's what it's all about. This guy did a great job. He improved the economy, but he did it at the expense of the people. And the economy is supposed to be there to serve the people. We apparently created this system to service our needs, and yet we are now the most expendable thing within its parameters. That's a huge awakening for people. And it's obvious. It's blatantly obvious. It's right in front of their faces if they just step back and look at it.
So where do you think, I mean, do you think that we can turn this around? Do you think, do you have a sense of hopelessness? I mean, what's your take on where we are right now?
No, it seems to be a little hopeless, but I think we can turn it around. The worse it gets, the more people are waking up. But the problem is people are looking for someone to come along with a remedy for them, someone to create a new system and say, here, we've got this path now, like the Ubuntu system or the New Earth Nation or all these things that people are presenting, which are all great ideas. But you're not going to get the whole world to step out of this system and into a new one. What you've got to do is get people to change their mindset and change their heart space. It's got to come down to grassroots. It really does. You know, if we were to change our heart space and act according to moral parameters rather than legal parameters, do the right thing in all that we do, question any authority which causes us to deviate from our moral compass, then the system would have to change around our new heart space. It would be an organic thing. We don't have to create a new system. We've got to change what we are and how we interact with people. That's why it's got to start with you on the grassroots, right there on the ground floor with everybody. Change your own circle of influence. And once these ripples meet, then we can stand up against anything. But that's the only way we're going to do it. And if we even do construct a new system, you know, the Venus Project, New Earth Nation, Ubuntu, any of these things, if we haven't changed our moral compass and changed our heart space, when we step into these systems, we're going to end up back where we are now because we didn't change our moral compass. But if we change our moral compass, we don't have to change anything else. The system has to change around us. You imagine if everybody in business and everybody in real estate and everybody in mining and all these companies actually had morals and actually started doing what was right rather than cutting corners because it was cheaper to do so. This is, again, is a result of the economic model. You know, you cut corners because it's cheaper and you end up with disasters like Fukushima because safety standards weren't met, because it's all minimum. You've got to meet the minimum safety standards to make maximum profits because everybody's in shortage because of this privately run money system, which is designed to create scarcity, which causes people to rape the planet, cut corners and create all this pollution and disaster and all this rubbish. It's all because people are not in their moral compass, you see. So that's where the change has to be. And if we change that, the system, we could change it in a day. We could change the whole world in a day if people simply woke up to themselves and didn't do anything that caused them to deviate from their moral compass. Any legislation, any company rule, company policy, anything that they say you've got to do this and you know it's wrong, you have an obligation not only not to do it but to report that activity to someone higher above, you know. And if we all did that, I mean, but we're all so scared of losing our jobs because we're in a state of scarcity, we've got to feed the kids, you know, so they trap us into this economic system. But I think it's got to come down to us. And that's the only hope that we have. There is no hope in any system that anybody's going to put in place that's going to lead people back to, you know, their natural state of abundance. It's got to come down to changing the attitudes of the people on the ground. You could do it with a small amount of people in each community, just strong, outspoken, passionate people who are prepared to stand up and have their voices heard. They could influence the community around them and just speak in common sense, and people would end up following them because a lot of people are going to follow because that's what they are. A lot of people just don't want to lead. They don't want self-responsibility. But if there's a strong, powerful voice that stands up speaking common sense from a moral perspective, I believe people will listen. I do. And the more negative the government makes it, the more they will listen because it's coming to their backyard, you know.
You know, when you talk about a system, you know, I just recently looked up the word a system, the etymology of the word system, and it says the system is the whole creation, the universe. So really, when we talk about system, there's really only one system that we have to abide by, and that would be the system of natural law, right?
Exactly, exactly. And the false system that we've got now, it's like it's superimposed itself over reality, this fictional matrix that we've got, this economic model. It's superimposed itself over reality. And law, like what we call law, has superimposed itself over natural law. Legislation has superimposed itself over natural law. And legislation is not law. It's legislation. It's just rules people write on pieces of paper, and it masquerades as law. It looks like law. It pretends to be law, but it's not law. It's actually designed to remove actual law from the planet because real law, natural law, is based in morals.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I know you sharply criticize the school system and even go so far as to basically call it like an indoctrination camp. And I look back at the, you know, 12 years I had of schooling, and besides basic reading and writing skills, I essentially learned nothing, you know. And I feel like, you know, it was only after leaving school that I actually started learning and things like that. It seems like until we address the school system, we're going to continue to have this mass ignorance because the school system is going to be churning out another round of ignorant people making decisions upon the world, running the world without a proper education. Do you think removing the state entirely is the answer to that? Can we set up another school system, educational system?
Well, look, we'd have to change the one we've got now and work towards that. I mean, yeah, look, I'd like to see the removal of the state altogether. I mean, I don't think we need government at all. We need self-governance. But unfortunately, most people in the world today are simply not capable of self-governance. They're not responsible enough to be self-governance. So you know, I look at it, I think, okay, well, there's been a series of sequential steps that have brought us to this point. Now, the two most important things are money and education. So they're the two main things we need to start at. But we need to reverse the sequence, which may take a generation, may take two, to get people back to a state of self-governance. First thing is get people out of scarcity, which means we've got to address the money system. And the same thing, at the same time, we've got to address the education system. This is massively important. People need real education. The education system at the moment is trained people to function as functional little cogs in the big machine. It's trained to it's there to train people to respect authority and to believe that we need the system to stay as it is. You know, we don't want to rock the status quo. We need to leave it as it is. Don't worry about all these big decisions. The big guys will take care of that. You're just a little person, and here's the way you do things. It trains you to be a slave. That's what it's all about. The education system does not educate at all. It indoctrinates. It indoctrinates people into respecting authority and believing the system is real. But you need to question authority. Any authority that makes you step outside of your moral compass, you need to question. I question every single thing that I'm asked to do. If anybody asks me to do anything, for the first part, I want to know why they believe they own me or have a right of ownership over me at all, that they should be telling me to do anything. You know, and people need to do that. I mean, I got kicked out of four schools for this attitude, but hey, it helped me. But I mean, I don't know. There is no hope for this education system. I don't know how we could create anything good out of it in its current form. But I mean, schools would work. We need re-education, and we do need some sort of governance, some sort of system here now to lead us back to a point where we don't need it. Because and if we went to a state of self-governance now, if we just had a revolution and brought down all our governments, it would be chaos. There would be violent people take control of society. It would be terrible. A lot of people wouldn't survive. So we need to re-educate them in reality and lead them back. You know, gradually make government smaller and smaller and smaller. I mean, we could if we now took control of this system because we had respectful communities and we decided we want transparency in government. Put video cameras in every government room so we all know what our governments are doing. Put the transparency there so we can all see and we all vote on major matters like referendums. Everybody participates, like direct democracy. Get that involved. Change the education system. Get rid of the private issuance of currency. And that would, for a start, put people in a state where they at least have time to think. You know, if we change the private issuance of currency and got back to a non-debt-based system, we could have a situation where people are only working 2 days a week to receive the same wages they're getting now. So you'd have 100% employment, which is good for people who believe employment's important. And you'd have everybody in abundance, and you'd have everybody with time to think. Now you've got five days a week off, so you actually get time to philosophize and plant in the garden and get to know your neighbors, and you're not running on the treadmill all the time. We've got to get people off this treadmill so they've got time to think. And the only way we're going to do that is to address the money system. That's why I spent so much focus on that. But again, this could happen through the education system. Well, the money system and the education system are kind of, it's hard to know which one we should address first because they're both just as important as each other. So I say we address them both at the same time. And I think we've been given opportunities to do this through the world situation. I think things like Gaza Strip is a huge opportunity for us because it's a war crime and it gives us the opportunity to rein our governments in because our governments are supporting this war crime, which gives we, the people, an opportunity to rein our governments back under control. Once we've got them under control and we've got the attention of the people, then we can start looking at how we got in this situation. What creates these wars? What creates this scarcity? Okay, it's the banking system. So obviously the banking system doesn't support the people. Let's address the banking system. Why don't people know this? Well, it's because of the education system, so we need to address this at the same time. So we could use Gaza to get back to this point, you know what I'm saying? There's so many situations in the world now that have been giving us so many opportunities to simply stand up and call a spade, and we could make a huge difference. There's no debate whether Gaza's a war crime, and there's no debate that our governments are supporting this war crime, and there's no debate that it says in our constitutions you can't support war crimes. So why is this happening? Because we have divided communities who don't know about this stuff, you know. It's a big loop that we're stuck in, but I think we have a way out. I really do. I think there's so many opportunities we've been provided with, and it's going to keep getting worse until people start seizing these opportunities. That's why it is getting worse. You know, you're not awake yet. Here, I have a bit more. Can you see it now? You know, it's just getting so in your face. The world's gone completely crazy in the last 12 months, and all of these things are opportunities for us if you can see how they are all related and can be used to complement all the other situations that we face as well. They're all interrelated, and they all provide opportunities and doorways for us.
Let's talk the Gaza Strip here, because you just mentioned that. I know this is close to your heart. You've been over there to see this firsthand. What, like, can you? One of the reasons I actually wanted to have you on is because you have a great perspective on this. Can you do can we take 5 minutes here and sort of flesh out the history of this situation and what's going on right now?
Well, in Gaza, you've got the history of it, I suppose, comes back to the 1947 division by the United Nations, where they divided Palestine into two countries and gave half of it to the Ashkenazi Jews from Europe, who don't have any ancestral claim to Israel. They're not the descendants of King David. These are converts from Europe. And basically, they've come down and they've been ethnically cleansing Palestine for the last 67 years under the guise of being victims. And what's going on in Gaza Strip? Gaza Strip is the world's biggest open air prison. It's the equivalent of the Warsaw Ghetto that they had in World War II, only far, far worse, far bigger. It's an area 25 miles long, 4.5 miles wide, hemmed in by a wall and military in the oceans. And even now, they've gone in there in a 51-day bombing campaign and obliterated the place. And now they're just taking pot shots at farmers through the fences. They're shooting fishermen off the coast. They're doing everything they can to just let these people slowly die. And it's genocide. It's genocide. The people in Israel at the moment have absolutely no claim to the land at all. And they're being supported in war crimes by our government. Gaza Strip, the existence of it is a war crime. It's collective punishment. People will argue and say, well, the people in Gaza voted for Hamas, which is a terrorist organization, so they get what they deserve. Well, you know, Hamas is not a terrorist organization. It's a legitimate resistance against Israeli aggression, which is constant. Absolutely constant. They terrorize these people every single day. The terrorists are not the Palestinians, they're the Israelis. And the Hamas, I mean, they say this is a terrorist organization, everybody voted for them. Well, the population of Gaza is 1.8 million people, over 900,000 children. They didn't vote. And of the 850 adult population, there's about 400 to 450,000 men, 400 to 450,000 women. And the women don't vote. So that's about 400 to 450,000 people who voted. The majority voted for Hamas. So that's about 250,000 people who voted for Hamas. So that's 250,000 who actually voted. The other 1.5 million who are suffering the war crime of collective punishment, did not vote for Hamas, did not have anything to do with it. And these people are being terrorized by Israel all the time. Now, under the Fourth Geneva Convention, collective punishment is a war crime. This is not a debatable point. It's a war crime. In West Bank, going in and building settlements in occupied territory, your army's gone in there, you've occupied another country, you can't build settlements there. You've got to work out what the borders are. Israel doesn't do that. It goes in, bulldozes Palestinian homes and builds Israeli settlements on Palestinian land. Been doing this for 67 years. This is a war crime. It uses banned chemical weapons against the Palestinians, dime ammunition, white phosphorus, all sorts of banned weapons, flash A bombs in residential areas. These are all war crimes. It bombs hospitals. This is a war crime. It bombs ambulances. This is a war crime. It bombed the waterworks. This is a war crime. It bombed the power station. This is a war crime. It prevents the fishermen from fishing in the ocean. This is a war crime. It won't allow parts in for the sewage plant and bomb the sewage plant, bomb the graveyards even. These are all war crimes. Bomb the UN school after giving out the coordinates 17 times it was a safe place to go. This is a war crime. These are not debatable points. The list of war crimes of Israel are absolutely phenomenal. And I was actually at this art meeting, at an art convention yesterday, and I was having a conversation with an Israeli, and I said to him, look, I've been to Gaza. He said, yeah, I've been to Gaza too. I've been there in the army, and I've been killing people in Gaza. And he said, I hate it. I hate it. I hate what I do, because these are beautiful people, but we don't have a choice, because if we don't do it, we get brutalized by our own government. He says, the problem in Gaza isn't the people of Israel. The problem is the Israeli government, and we want to fix it, but we don't know what to do about it. This is why people can't hate the Jews. You know, it turns into this whole hate the Jew fest, and it's not about that. It's about the Israeli government, who are not real Jews. These are Ashkenazis. These are Khazars. These are white people from Europe. These are not Semitic Jews. So it's a very, very confusing issue, but people have to step back from it and think, well, let's forget about the fact that these are Jews and Palestinians. Let's forget that they are Jews and Muslims. Let's forget about the fact that one place is called Israel and one place is called Palestine. What we've got here is a situation where real people are hemmed in by a wall. Over half of them are children under the age of 18, and they are subject to brutal and inhuman treatment from Israel every single day. It's a humanitarian issue. It doesn't matter whether they're Muslims, Jews. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter whether it's Ireland and Cornwall doing this. Doesn't matter whether Ireland put a wall around Cornwall and decided to do this to the people in Cornwall. Doesn't matter if it's India or Palestine, India and Pakistan. It doesn't matter whether it's America putting a wall around Florida and doing this. It's the same thing. This is a humanitarian issue. The attack against the people of Palestine is an attack against humanity. The siege of Gaza is a siege against humanity. And the treatment of the that is meted out to the Palestinian people spells a grave danger for all of humanity. This is the greatest moral dilemma we have ever been faced. And the people who are doing it are crying victim, and they have no claim to the land. And the whole concept of ownership anyway, I mean, it's ridiculous, but I believe it provides an opportunity for us. It does. It's a war crime of mammoth proportions and a humanitarian crisis of mammoth proportions. It's the greatest moral dilemma we've ever faced. And if we can address this issue and fix this issue, I believe we can fix every war on the planet. We can stop everything. We can actually cause people to view things with a little bit of common sense. And we can stand up and say, hey, look, all of this is a result of out-of-control governments, which is a result of neglectful populations who have not been paying attention to their governments, because we believe the governments rule us, but they don't. They're public trustees who are all in abuse of office, all in breach of trust. And it's time we all stood up and called a spade a spade. And the situation in Gaza is giving us the opportunity to do this. It really is. It's ethnic cleansing and genocide being carried out on a massive scale by people crying victim, and they are people who have absolutely no claim to the land. If you actually look in Palestine, you'll find that there is stronger Jewish blood in Palestine than there is in most of the people in Israel. So, you know, the descendants, the chosen people, the descendants of King David and all this sort of stuff, it's Palestinians. If you believe in Christ and all that sort of stuff, well, Jesus was a Palestinian. He was born in Galilee. There was even a Jewish scholar who said, bring me a Christian child from Galilee and I will show you the purest Jewish blood on the planet. So the people who are controlling Israel and are wiping out the Palestinians are not the real Jews. They are not God's chosen people at all. And they are actually causing a massive amount of instability in the world. I believe ISIS and all of this, ISIL, these are all receiving funding from Israel. This is all an Israeli Western-run operation, the whole thing. So it seems like a complicated issue, but it's not. Basically, you've got a bunch of usurpers who moved into a country they had no claim to, and they've been crying victim while destabilizing the Arab world for the last 70 years. All the Arab extremism, all the terrorism, everything we've seen out of that region is all a result of the people who are currently running Israel.
You know, I like the fact that you make a distinction between basically the Zionist or this extremist and then Jew, because even there's this Romans 2:29, it says, but he is a Jew, which is one inwardly. So a Jewish person, like as you were saying with Christ, is just somebody that has an inward spiritual life, who's spiritually uplifted. That's all it means to me anyway. So I really like that you make that distinction, because this is not, as you were saying, not an ethnic, you know, problem. This is a problem of morality. This is, you know.
It's a humanitarian issue. It is. Yeah. And there's so much Jew hatred because of this. And you've got to look at it. It's not the Jews, you know. It's these Khazars who've usurped the Jewish faith, and the Jews are getting the blame for it. I mean, sure, Judaism is a supremacist religion. It is. Just the fact that you're named as God's chosen is a little bit out there for me. I think everybody's God's chosen. I don't agree with any religions, you know. And people say, oh, you're a Muslim. I go, well, no, I don't really agree with being a Muslim either. I don't like religions. I don't think that they have any place in the mind of man. I really don't. I think that they're all control systems. But, hey, if you want to be part of a religion, great. I respect you for that. But don't abuse others or impose it upon others or view others as being a lesser person because they're not part of your faith. If your faith promotes that, then your faith is flawed. You know, because I believe we're all created with equal potential and equal value, regardless of who or what we are. I don't really believe in races and countries and stuff. We made it all up. It's just different people born in different places with different attributes. You know, we made all these countries and all this concept of ownership up. And it's so important that the Israeli-Palestinian issue does not turn into this let's hate the Jews thing, because it isn't the Jews that are doing it. There's certain elements of the Jewish faith, like out of the Talmud, that these Zionists and these Khazars have blown out of proportion and created this whole extremist mentality. But saying that people who are carrying out all these atrocities against the Palestinians are real Jews is like saying that Torquemada and the guys who did the Spanish Inquisition were real Christians. You know, they weren't. They were so far from the teachings of Christ, it was ridiculous. Didn't have any resemblance to it. Same as these ISIL Islamic, so-called Islamic extremists. They're not Islamic. They're not Islamic in any way, shape, or form. They're just maniacs. They're terrorists. But the fact that they're screaming out that they're Islam indicates that they come from Israel, because Israel has been trying to wipe out Islam for years. And if you look at it, you find that they're all receiving funding in the Golan Heights. They're receiving medical attention in the Golan Heights. They're pouring weapons into Syria to these people who are taking them straight over the border into Iraq. US is doing weapons drops to them. They're all using AR-15s and M16 weapons. They're all driving brand new Toyota Hiluxes and wearing brand new Nikes. They're fully funded by the West. The whole thing's a Western-run operation. It's got nothing to do with any religion. People have got to get all this stuff out of their minds. It's not about religion. It's not about Islam trying to take over the world. Islam isn't a threat. Islam is a peaceful religion. All the Muslims I've met have been some of the most beautiful, wonderful, kindest, generous people I've ever met. And I've been all around the world. And what can I say? When I meet these people, they're so courteous. They are so lovely. And some of my best friends are Arabs, because these are genuine, real people with no pretense. And even Iran doesn't want nuclear weapons. When they had the war between Iraq and Iran, Iran wouldn't even shoot missiles into Iraq because it was against God's will to bomb civilian areas. So they wouldn't even send missiles in. You know, like, they're saying they want nuclear weapons. They're saying, we don't want nuclear weapons. We think that nuclear weapons are an abomination against Allah. You know, why would they want to develop these things? They don't. They just want power, you know. So, you know, they want electricity. So that's all their nuclear program's all about, you know. But, I mean, people have got to step back and get out of this whole religious mindset, this whole ethnic mindset, and realize that this is a humanitarian issue. What exists on the planet is just people with different attributes that come from different places. All of them have something to offer. And if we can put all of our stuff down, we'll figure this out. But, I mean, I never met anybody who wanted a war. Only leaders and bankers want war. People only want war when they're whipped up into a frenzy by some rubbish they've been fed by their media, which is usually not true anyway. You know, it whips them up into violence, and they want to go out and attack somebody else, because that's the way we deal with the problems in our own lives. We're kept in such a state of scarcity and such a state of repression, and without even knowing it, we've got these mental cages around ourselves that we like to go and get violent against somebody else. It gets us, you know, we relieve some of that pent-up emotion, you know, so... It's a twisted situation we got here, Marty.
You know, when we were talking about religions, and, you know, to me, it never made any sense that when somebody believed in a religion, that was cause for division in any sort of way. Because especially when you look at, like, you know, Christianity is actually, when you look at the stories, it's an amalgamation of Hindu, Persian, Greek, Egyptian stories. And then, you know, which says to me that at the core, the collection of myths was never intended to be a tool for division, but instead a way to bring different people together. But this is, once again, completely distorted, perverted, and then used as a tool to divide people. So, the organized religions have a lot to answer for this. Since we're not going to get rid of them anytime soon, and I don't know if that's necessarily the answer, how do we deal with this sort of religious fervor that we see going on across the world?
Well, people have to really look at the positive aspects of their religion. It's really about peace.
Yes.
You know, all religions really promote peace. But unfortunately, the problem is that they all promote supremacism as well.
Yes.
You know, because they'll say, look, you've got to respect all the other religions. Everything's good. Love everybody. But hey, if you belong to this faith, you're the one that's got it right. You're better than all the others. And every faith will tell you that. So while it's promoting this concept of unity and peace and respect for everybody, it's doing so under the concept that you're actually better than them. So you're just tolerating the lesser people here, you know. And that kind of creates this division. And then we all try to convert each other, and we start getting into arguments. And people get into arguments, they don't get into debates, they get into arguments. And arguments are counterproductive. They turn violent. And, I mean, how do we get people out of this mindset? I mean, it's a good question. But I think by focusing on the more positive aspects of their religion, I mean, really, when you look at Islam and Christianity, they're almost the same. They're so close, it's ridiculous. So there's no reason these people should be fighting. The only thing is that the Muslims say that Christ wasn't the son of God. He was just a prophet, that we're all sons of God. And I tend to go with that concept more than the concept that God came here as his son and let him die for all our sins. I think this is a cop-out. I think this whole Redeemer complex has allowed us to carry out massive amounts of destruction around the planet. And it's also managed to dispossess the earth as well. If you really look at religions, I mean, the religions are all really Abrahamic. Like Islam and Christianity came from the same source. You know, if you look at the sons of Abraham, Ishmael is where Islam came from, and the rest came from Christianity. So it's really the same people. There's no reason for these people to be fighting. But the concept that Yahweh made with Abraham, when Yahweh promised Abraham the land of Israel, this is when the concept of ownership came into people's minds. You can actually own a piece of the earth. And if you do what I say, you can have this little piece of the earth. But by promising that little piece of the earth to Abraham, he dispossessed Abraham of his heritage, which was the whole earth. Because you can't own the earth. You're only here for a little while. The earth owns you. You don't own the earth or any part of the earth because you're only a temporary inhabitant. The earth's been here for 4.6 billion years, probably be here for another 100 billion. Do the math. What do you own? You don't own anything. You're only here for 50 or 100, you know? Yeah. So this whole concept of ownership went out through the monotheistic religions, and then they went out and dispossessed everybody else down the line, which is a lot of what religion has done. It's created countries and division. We believe this and you believe that, so we'll draw a line here, and you're that country and we're this country. You know, it's all about division. The whole thing has been created to create division. And because there's a seed of supremacism in every religion, people believe they have the right to shout the others down because the others just don't have it right. They've got it all wrong, obviously, because they're not part of my faith, so they must have it wrong, you know. So this is in all religions, so I don't agree with any of them. How do we get out of it? I don't know. Again, probably by being friends with people. I mean, in Gaza, there's a large Christian population in Gaza, and these people aren't in competition with the Muslims all the time. There's actually a building in Gaza which is on a corner of a street, and it's got one doorway on the corner, and you walk into the left-hand side of the room for the mosque, and you walk into the right-hand side of the room for the church, and they pray together in the one building. So, you know, there's no animosity between these people. It's all created by you know, pundits and the rulers and the media and all the people who want to spin all this division. But I think if we just focus on the good parts of the religion, we might find a way out. Personally, I don't need any religion. I've had some massive conversations, some wonderful conversations actually with Muslim friends, and I've told them all this stuff that I think about reality and how it's all energetic and we're just the frequency of consciousness and your consciousness isn't local to your body and all the things that I've said on the air so many times. And my Muslim friends are going, "You're a Muslim, Max. You just don't know it. You're a Muslim because all of this stuff's in the Quran. So you should become a Muslim." And I'm going, "Well, if it's all in the Quran and I already know this without reading the Quran, then why do I need the Quran?" And they go, "Well, good point. But, you know, Muhammad, blah, 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 he wrote all this stuff." And I'm going, but didn't he just channel it all? And wasn't it just the universe speaking through him?" And they said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, how do I know the universe isn't just speaking through me? And if I already know this stuff, without the book, why do I need the book to get in the way of my connection with the Creator?"
It's such a great point. Yeah.
Yeah, they couldn't argue with me because they're saying, because everything you say sounds like Muhammad talking to us. You sound like you are a Muslim. And I go, "Well, then why do I need the religion if I already know this and I've got it straight from the source? Why do I need anything to get in the way?" And they couldn't argue with me. And here's me saying, I don't need your religion. I don't think your religion's necessary. And they were okay with me saying that because of my philosophies. So it isn't like they want to convert everyone to Muslim. It just isn't like that. Here am I debating religions with Muslims in Gaza Strip, you know? I mean, aren't they supposed to cut my head off or something if I do that sort of thing? Isn't that what the media tells you?
Yeah.
You know? And even when I got detained in Gaza, like on the way out, we got detained by Hamas for 5 hours. They wanted to know how we got in. They ended up losing our luggage and all sorts of stuff. And then at the end of the day, they said, "Well, it's 5 or 6 o'clock now. It's not safe for two white guys to be crossing the Sinai." So they provided a driver to get us back to Cairo safely, and they sent our lost luggage after us. Does this sound like a terrorist organization, you know? And the interrogation, I mean, we sit there drinking tea and biscuits with these guys, and they were asking us questions and driving us around town to see if we could spot where the tunnel was. And they ended up letting us go, giving us a driver to get back to Cairo, sent our lost luggage after us. I mean, this is not a terrorist organization. You know, these two white guys broke into their country illegally, were running around with a video camera for 10 days filming people. You know, if I'd done that in Israel or even my own country, I'd probably still be in bloody jail. you know. So, you know, people have to adjust their perspective of what's really going on here. Don't believe what the media tells you. Go and have a look for yourself. That's why I went there. I just wanted to have a look. Go and check it out. See what's really going on. And what I found was the complete opposite of what we've been told.
Yeah, and I'm guessing you're not going to get on CNN anytime soon, huh?
Yeah, it doesn't seem that way, mate. They don't want me saying these things. I'm so limited at the moment in what I can do, mate. With my YouTube channel has been restricted. My Facebook pages have been restricted.
Has it really?
Service attacks on my account. Yeah, I don't get hardly anything come up on my news feed. And most people don't see my posts when I post them on my page. They have to actually physically go to my page and check to see if I've posted anything. So they've limited everything. I've limited my YouTube account down to 15 minutes. I uploaded a video called ISIS, the Muslim Menace and the Greater Israel Project, just pointing out the fact that there is no Muslim menace and that ISIS is part of the Greater Israel Project. And within 24 hours, they'd restricted my channel. They actually went to my old channel and they found two videos from 3 years ago and they flagged them and then said, you've broken copyright, so we're going to limit both of your channels. And my new channel, it was completely separate. I hadn't had any copyright strikes on it. I've been very, very careful that all original material, all original footage, all artwork I've got permission to use, everything was original. No strikes on this channel at all. And they limited both my channels within 24 hours of uploading that video. So now I can only upload 15-minute videos.
Yeah, so. I was talking to the Vinnie Eastwood, and the same thing happened to him, you know. Mm. It was just it's crazy. When, you know, when we talk about, like, this sort of, like, overarching nefarious evil organization or whatever, where do you feel like this comes from? If you're going to, you know, point one finger, you know, where do you think it's coming from?
Banksters. The banking cartels. Mm-hmm. If there's something higher at the top, people are going to speculate and say, oh, it's aliens, it's reptilians, it's whatever. I don't know. I don't go there.
Yeah.
It's not relevant. It's counterproductive. We've got a physical situation here on this planet. This is a physical 3D reality in this world that we're participating in, and there's a control mechanism in here. Regardless of who runs it, it exists. And what is it? Well, the money system is the glue that holds it together. The fact that money is privately issued. You know, the people at the top who control our governments have an unlimited supply of money. They can just print money from thin air as much as they want, put digits on the screen as much as they want. And through this private issuance of currency and this unlimited supply of currency, they have been able to buy every government, every military, every police force, everybody on the planet that's worth anything. And that is who pulls the strings. So we've got to address the private issuance of currency. That is the biggest problem that we face. And that I would say, is who's pulling the strings. You look at the 13 families, the banking cartels, the Rothschilds, all these guys marginalizing different countries through control of the finances. This is how it's all done.
One of the things that keeps coming up when we talk about, like, you know, pointing the finger at you know, one organization, whatever, is why? Why are they doing this? I mean, can we even speculate on, you know, psychopaths or you know, what's your take on that?
Well, they're psychopaths. That's why they're doing it. It's exactly why they're doing it, because they're psychopaths. They just want to see the world burn. People think they're doing it because they want wealth. It isn't about wealth. They've got unlimited wealth. They've got unlimited money. It's about power. It's about controlling you. See, what they harvest isn't your wealth. It's you. It's your time. It's your belief of what you are. They're making you walk between the lines all the time and collect paper in order to pay to be alive. The harvest is you. What they're doing is they've spread this system out to the whole world. Basically, the war on terror is now consolidating the corporations. It's basically gone into every country that doesn't have a central bank, so it can impose one, because when you control the money system of the country, then you control the government, then you control the people. So they've got all this in place now. They've got all the resources there. They found where all the oil is and where all the gold is, and the whole planet is their sand pit now. So now they've got everything. All they've got to do is eliminate the population that they don't want, reduce the population, get rid of all the useless eaters. They only need enough people to run the infrastructure. And then they can just sit there and puppeteer things the way they want. I mean, a lot of these guys are pedophiles, and they like having fun with kids. They like doing all sorts of stuff. So they just sit there and they let the world go on the way it is, and then they just harvest it and they just indulge themselves in their glory and their wealth and their control. That's what they do. They're just sociopathic, psychopathic control freaks who don't care about the damage they do. That's why it's no good appealing to our politicians for their better judgment. Like in coal seam gas mining, we petition these people. We think if we speak to them the right way, they might act responsibly. but they're not going to act responsibly. They're psychopaths. They don't care whether they're creating hardship for people. They want to create hardship for people. Otherwise, they wouldn't have let the industry in. We've got to realize these people are psychopaths, and we've got to step above it and start operating according to moral parameters. It's the only way we're going to fix this system, because it's a psychopathic system. And if you think the people who are running the world aren't psychopaths, just look at the system. Why is humanity so expendable within the system? See, when you've got a psychopath who controls a country or controls a corporation or a company, then the morals of the psychopath become the morals of the people he controls. This is the system. This is the type of social system and type of economic system we have. It's psychopathic. It's a system which will discard life in order to balance the books. This is not normal. This is not human. This is not anything that serves humanity in any way. And so, therefore, there is your confirmation that this system is run by psychopaths simply because of the amount of homeless, the amount of war, the amount of starvation, the amount of hardship that people are in everyday Western societies now. The austerity measures, we've got to bring this because of money and this and that. Money's fiction. What is austerity? It's ridiculous. It's just putting people in hardship in order to balance the books so the rich people can keep getting richer and richer. That's what it's all about. And we've got to step above it all and start acting according to morals. That's how it's going to work. But there's no debate. I mean, it's a psychopathic system. Have a look at it. Just step back and look at it. It's a psychopathic system. And really, when you look at psychopaths, you're kind of getting into dangerous area, because when you look at psychopaths, you can see that they actually have a different brain structure to normal human beings. Their brain works differently. So it's like there are two species on this planet. You know, and one of them is eliminating the other, basically. And psychopaths recognize each other too, which is why you'll get the most sociopathic and intolerant people within certain companies are always promoted to positions of authority, because the psychopaths recognize them down the food chain and they put them in authority because they know they'll keep the people in line. You know, psychopaths have kind of a two-dimensional look to their eyes. And there is definitely two species on this planet, I think. And that's where a lot of the problem comes. But it's a dangerous area to go into, because then you start thinking, okay, well, there's a war. Okay, he's a psychopath, so I can kill him. But, you know, it's a lot of people are trained into this way of thinking. So, I mean, there's people like John Lash who's saying he wants to basically this Kalika war party he wants to form, which is basically about, you know, we're not going to fix these psychopaths. It's time to take them out. And I said to him, yeah, well, you got to really know which ones you're dealing with. I mean, because people are trained to be sociopathic, whether they are or not. I mean, if you want to succeed in the business world, for example, you've got to be sociopathic. Mm-hmm. It's all about dog eat dog. You've got to control people. You've got to be ruthless in the business world, you know. And this breeds sociopathic mentality in people. So, you know, who are the psychopaths? It's hard to know. People are trained to think this way, so you can't judge them for it. It's like blaming the people of Israel for what they're doing to Palestine. They're trained to be that way. You can't blame them for it because of the programming they receive. And it's the same with people in the business world. So it's very difficult to figure out who the sociopaths are and who's just been trained to act in the way they do. Because often people who are ruthless in business go home and cry about it at night, but they think, wow, I had no choice. And that is programming, you know. So it's a hard line.
What was your awakening like?
Oh, man, I woke up when I was four. I woke up when my mother told me we couldn't live in the forest because we didn't own the land. I couldn't understand the concept of owning land. And I was walking around in the yard with my teddy bear that afternoon going, Teddy, it's all messed up. I'm in the wrong place. I was born onto the wrong planet. These people think they can own land. And so I was sort of in wonderment at the world since I was four. Like I said, I got kicked out of four high schools. I didn't get along with any of my peers, and I couldn't understand my friends and any of that sort of stuff. I thought the whole world was messed up. And it wasn't until I was about 12 and I discovered a Frank Zappa album, and he was telling me that the world was all messed up too. And I thought, my God, thank God somebody else thinks the way I do. I'm not crazy, you know. So, it was a hard one for me. So I became a musician when I was like 15, 16 years old, and just started living on the outside of society because I didn't want to participate.
Mm-hmm. So you did you play in bands and things like that? Did you tour or anything?
Oh, yeah, I used to. Yeah, I used to tour around a lot. You tour through Europe and all sorts of places and around Australia for years and years, either playing guitar or doing front of house, but just living on the outside of society. I became a very, very good sound engineer, and so I used to get more work as a sound engineer than a guitar player, because it's easier to find guitar players than sound engineers. And I was a very good sound engineer, so I was never, ever out of work. And it was great, really, because, I mean, you go to places and you set up in the afternoon, you do the gig at night, and you're really only working 4 or 5 or maybe 10 hours a week. And you got all the time spare to research. So I got to travel to all these different places, and I got to meet people from all different walks of life, because a lot of people like to hang out with the musician. They like to, you know, if you're a good band or you're a half-decent musician, people like to talk to you. So you meet people who are the scum of society, and you meet people who are the aristocracy of society and everybody in between. And you get to see the world from their perspective. So it was really interesting, and it gave me a lot of people skills and a lot of interesting perspectives from a different rungs on the social ladder. And I was just able to observe all this and do my research along the way and research ancient mysteries and get paid to do it, travel around the world and get paid to go to all these strange places. And it was a great lifestyle, and it provided the information and the background and all the stuff that I needed to do what I'm doing now, which is something I never planned on doing. It just kind of ended up falling into my lap. I mean, I never planned on being a radio host or a filmmaker or anything like that, but my lifestyle as a musician allowed me to gather all that information and gave me the time I needed and the skills I needed to do exactly what I'm doing now.
How has your involvement with music, you know, itself helped your internal harmony? Because a lot of people that I talk to, including myself, it's like music has been an enormous help in guiding them to finding their own spiritual self, if you will.
Well, music's a type of meditation. I mean, I've always viewed your life as an artistic experience. You're an artistic expression of creation, and you're here to express your art, whatever that may be. It might be the art of playing. It might be the art of painting. It might be the art of building. It might be the art of growing food. It could be the art of having children. It could be the art of meditation, the art of whatever, the art of being you. You are an art form. You know, and that's how I've always viewed my life, and it's like a meditation to me. But then, you know, you get involved in the music industry, and it becomes a job. And then suddenly you're playing covers and you're doing all these things. And then you step back and you look at what the music industry actually is, and it's a huge distraction for people. The music industry is a huge part of the problem, actually. This is why you get bands like U2 receive a knighthood. Why would U2 receive a knighthood? You know, for service to the British Empire. It's because they've distracted an entire generation of kids that are now old and drug-fucked, and they're not looking at the world, you know, so... this is what it's done. It's a huge distraction. It's become part of the control group, which is not what I intended on doing when I started playing guitar. To me, it was an artistic expression. And when I saw what I was swimming in, I sort of had to leave. I mean, I'll still go and play. I'll still jam with people. I'll do stuff, but I won't be involved in that whole commercial aspect of it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Another thing that seems to come up a lot is like people going through a depression in their awakening or whatever, or, you know, if you're saying you're living on the sort of peripheries of society. I myself have gone through like pretty deep depression dealing with all of this stuff and then coming out of that. Did you go through anything like that?
Look, I had a very depressed life when I was a child and all through my musician years. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't understand why I wasn't like other people. I thought it was me, you know, and I'm looking at this whole control grid and I thought it was me. I couldn't understand why other people didn't see it. I couldn't understand why it was so important to me when it wasn't important to other people. And I just wanted to be able to talk about the weather and have these normal, inane conversations that other people have. And I couldn't. And mate, I used to think, well, it's because I'm a Scorpio. Scorpios are apparently really intense. And so I just can't do any of that, you know. But I went through years of depression. But then when I had this experience in 2008 that I've often related, which I don't want to relate again because I've done it so many times, just check some of my back shows. But I had this meditation experience where I connected with everything and I discovered my own perfection and I saw what it's all about. And that's when I started doing the shows and making the films and doing all this sort of stuff. And everything in my life has worked out from that point. Now that I understand the matrix, now I understand the energetic nature of the universe, it's worked out for me. And I've realized that it's not about having a stake in the outcome. It's simply about what you do with the information. It can get depressing and frustrating that people aren't waking up around you. It's so obvious that this control grid exists, and you think, why can't other people see it? But it's okay. It's okay if they can't see it. We don't need everybody to see it. We just need those who do see it to start acting in the right way and start following their moral compass and taking the moral high ground in all that they do. And maybe these people won't survive the crunch. Maybe they'll get assassinated or whatever, the way Christ was or other people were. But it doesn't matter. You don't ever die. It's not about that. It's not about this existence. You can't be in fear of death. Death's the only part of life that's inevitable. You're only here for a little while. It's what you do with it while you're here, what you do with the information. You know, notice the two polarities, love and fear. They're here. What do you do with them? And what stake do you actually have in the outcome of anything that you do? You're only a temporary existence. You're here to leave a legacy behind. You're here to discover the art of yourself and improve the world to the best of your ability. That's what I believe anyway. But ultimately, it's here to you're here to improve the self. There's a show I did recently called Frequency Shift Reality Reset, which I'd love people to listen to, where I kind of explain the world in the concept of it being a computer program. Imagine we're living in a mainframe, and I go through it for about 45 minutes on how, if you apply this perspective to reality, you can see that it's all about energy flow. That's what it's about, and it's about what you do with it. Therefore, there's no really reason to be depressed. There's nothing to be depressed about, not unless you have a stake in the outcome, but you don't, because you're only a temporary being. You're only here to contribute what you can. You know, and if the world doesn't wake up, well, that's fine. The experiment will reset. It will start again. It doesn't matter. If humanity destroys itself, it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter. They won't destroy the Earth. The Earth will be here for as long as it wants to be here. It'll get over us. This is simply an experiment. It's an experiment in consciousness, and it's what we do with it. And I think it's one of the most important and significant and powerful times in history to be alive right now, because we're at the time where the program is shifting. Consciousness is evolving to the next level. We've never had this type of an awakening on the planet. We've never, ever been able to see the control grid for what it is. And we are making a difference. Just the fact that they're ramping things up to this whole war on terror and everything they're doing, like shooting planes out of the sky, Ebola scares, everything they can think of to keep people in this state, shows how much these people are panicking, how much the world is waking up, and how much of a difference we're actually making. We are. I don't think anybody should be depressed about this. I think it's a wonderful time to be here, and we don't need the whole world to wake up. So don't be depressed about that. Just be aware of what energetic state you're in and how you're applying yourself to reality, because that's what makes a difference.
Well said. We only got a few minutes left here. One thing I wanted to ask you was, when we talk about a moral compass, one of the ways that I figured out how to get my moral compass to point north, if you will, was having a relationship with nature, with immersing myself in nature. You seem like I get the impression that you're very connected to Mother Earth. What is your relationship with nature? Do you hike? Do you camp? Do you do long walks?
I mean, I live in paradise. I live in nature. I live out in the country. I live in a rainforesty setting. It's beautiful. We've got peacocks in the yard. I got waterfalls at the end of the road. I'm out in the nature all the time. Yeah. I used to hike a lot when I was young. I used to go camping a lot. I used to go into the mountains and the old growth forests and camp and stuff there. I don't really have time to do it these days, but I'm in nature all the time, and I'm part of everything. I mean, we're all connected. Everything is connected. The whole universe is energetic. It's all about energy. So don't think you're not connected to everything that is. I mean, you are. Your consciousness isn't even part of your body. Your consciousness exists in the field. Your body is just a vessel that harvests a frequency from the field. It's the energy, the stuff, the space that looks empty is what's real. That space is full of energy, and that energy creates everything in the whole universe. It's all created from this same energy. So we are all one. We are all connected to everything that is. It's just that we are completely unique and divided in our perspective. Your perspective is what makes you you. It's you. It's who you are, your unique perspective. No one will ever have that. And you're perfect at having that perspective. No one can have that better than you. So why would you ever consider yourself to be anything but perfect? And everybody else is like this as well. They all have their unique perspectives that they are perfect at having, and no one else can have that. So they're all perfect, and they're all necessary. And we're all part of nature. We're all connected to everything, every rock, every tree, every planet, every star, everything in the universe. It's all part of the same energy. And this is obvious. It's really obvious once you start looking at even the nature of matter. The atoms, are 99.99999% empty space. So it's all about the space. That's what's real. And I reckon if you've got the entire universe and you took all the space out between the atoms and you compressed it down to one solid object, it would be the size of a green pea, the entire universe. So don't think that you're not connected, because you are. Everything is energy. And that's a huge philosophy that's helped my life.
And that teaching is intrinsic in nature.
Mm. Yeah, it's everywhere. It's everywhere, and it's obvious once you see it.
Yeah. So what's next on your agenda? What do you got in the works?
Well, I'm trying to have some downtime at the moment, but I'm just not getting any. I've been doing lectures and going to art displays, and I've got a couple of lectures next week and blah, blah, blah. But I want to launch Full Circle Project this year, which is a huge job. But it's changing all the time. It's just remorphing and changing. And I've been really sick, actually. I had meningitis last year. And the last 10 days even, I've been really sick. I've had this headache for the last 6 days. I've had this constant headache. And I just can't seem to get rid of it. So I'm a bit concerned about that. But I want to launch Full Circle Project this year. I've got a lot on. I've got a lot of traveling to do. I've got to go and catch up with some people in Bali later this month. And I've got to get to Europe at some stage. And I've got to get to Peru. I've got to be back here in September. I've got so much on. So, yeah, it's I don't know at the moment. I don't know which way I'm going to go and when I'm going to get there. But I got a lot on. I just got to figure it all out and coordinate it.
Well, when you get the Full Circle Project going, if you want to stop back on, I'd love to have you back on and help you promote that. So, because I love what you do.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are waiting for Full Circle Project, and I've had so many obstacles in my way just with health and stuff. So I've really had to just step back for the moment and try to get myself back up to par, because otherwise, if I go out there the way I'm feeling at the moment, I won't last. So I've got to try to get my health back and get this all on the road and launched.
Do you want to let people know where they can check out your work and check out what you do and all that?
Yeah, well, the best place to go is the Crow House, thecrowhouse.com. You can go there. You'll find links to my YouTube channels, to my Facebook pages, to the Full Circle Project. You'll find it all there on thecrowhouse.com.
Awesome. All right, that's going to do it for us. Max, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate your perspectives and your work and everything. Keep on keeping on, and the best to you in the future.
My pleasure, Marty. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for the kind words, brother. Happy to come on and have a chat anytime.
All right, thanks, man.
No worries. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Our outro song is provided by Tom Rose and is entitled Connection of Minds, and it's off his stellar record, With or Without. This record was recorded live in the studio and in front of a live audience, and this song is a real gem. Tons of heart and soul in this one, and it's just a great-sounding record. Tom is currently on tour and is traveling all over the country, and you can check out his tour dates as well as pick up his record on his site, www.tomrhodesmusic.com, and Rhodes is spelled R-H-O-D-E-S. Coming up in the next episode of the Marty Leeds Math Magical Radio Hour will be a casual conversation with sacred geometric artist and researcher of free energy, Josh Toms. We will also be hearing from such musical guests as Minden, Sophistafunk, 3 for Silver, Will Brown, and the Blue Ribbon Healers. Make sure to stay tuned and always remember, an opinion without pie is just an onion. Thanks.
'cause it's true if it's true. Somewhere between me and you I find a connection of mine. Of your fate, making a play for the stars today. I'm gonna leave this world.
Been listening to the Marty Leeds Mathmagical Radio Hour. More information about the work of Marty Leeds can be found at MartyLeeds33.com. You can download his full-length studio record, Opus Medico Musica, from iTunes or Amazon.com, and be sure and check out his books, Pi and the English Alphabet, Volume 1 and 2, and The Peacock's Tales, available at MartyLeeds33.com and Amazon. For hours of free video, check out his YouTube channel at MartyLeeds33. More information about SyncBook Press, SyncBook Radio, or SyncBook Events can be found at thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast, please support it by becoming a donor. You'll find the donation links under each episode on the website and consider setting up a monthly charge. Thanks so much, and though some people think it's a piece of cake, we all know it's easy as pie.